Blog Talk Radio.
I've been holding on to a secret, the deep dark kind that you keep inside. All of my life I've been so mixed up, tried to run but I just can't hide. Every day when I look in the mirror, believe all the faces I see. I feel stained and I feel dirty, but soap and water never washed me clean. No, this is not my imagination. No, this is not just a very bad dream. What you hear is a true confession of a deep dark been haunting me. Sometimes it's too hard to remember. Over memory is killing me. How could someone say they love you and take away the child in me? Every day when I look in the mirror, I can't believe that it's happened to me. I've been hurt and I feel cheated. It's time I finally set me free. No, this is not my imagination. No, this is not just a very bad dream. What you hear is a true confession of a deep dark you have is a true confession that the deep dark secret, that the deep dark secret set you free, set you free.
Everybody, welcome to Fire Talk Productions, Stage Left. My name is David Little Eagle, and I'd like to introduce for the panel Nell Cole, who is a host and producer, and Mary Graybeal. On the stage tonight, we have a very special guest. Well, all our guests are special. We deal with an issue that have been covered in so many ways, and yet it's not covered enough. We have many wounded people out there with very, very wounded past, broken dreams, broken hearts. Well, this show is here to give voice to one of these survivor warriors. And it is with great pleasure, and it's a great honor for me to introduce to the stage, Patricia A. McKnight, and with her will be Mary Graybeal and Nell Cole. And with that being said, welcome to the show, Tricia, and the stage is yours.
Thank you very much, David. Hi, Nell. Hi, Mary. That
welcome.
Song. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I don't think you could have picked a better song. Talk about getting the situation ready here. I hope everybody appreciated that as much as I did. It really touched that part. You know, I think it does for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. My book is titled My Justice. It is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble, as well as AuthorHouse.com. It's also in the Kindle and Nook versions and the e-book. I'm going to start not at the beginning of the book, no, because the first five chapters I made available free online through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So I felt that since the readers could pick up that much free online, that it would be better to take them a little bit deeper into the book. I do want to kind of set the stage here a little bit.
Okay.
We're going into the book when I'm about 12 years old. At this point, I had been dealing with my stepfather for about 7 years. He had been an everyday part of my life and almost an every night visitor in my room. And constantly in the bathroom as I would be in there bathing. That was his biggest thing. I'm going to start off here where I'll just go ahead and get started.
Okay.
Beginning in chapter 6, Walter both hated and adored me now. He still kept coming into the bathroom when I tried to bathe. He would sit on the toilet seat and talk his filthy talk to me, making sure I responded to all of his disgusting remarks. He always made me talk his dirty language, and I knew way too much from my young age. I hated everything about my life. I hated him for making me participate in his sick little games. I hated everything about taking a bath because it became part of his torture. I just wanted to get in the bathroom and hide, not bathe. The last time I bathed, he came in, and I decided again to be brave. I yelled downstairs to Mom, asking her to make him get out. Of course, nobody cared what I had to say as I started to speak up against him. When I yelled for Mom, she just yelled back up for him to leave, just as though it were an accident he was in there at all. The rage in his eyes was so furious that they looked like they were on fire. He walked out of the bathroom swearing he would get back at me. He would make sure I paid for letting Mom know he was there. Not once did she ever ask if I was all right or what he did. She never even yelled at him for my protection. He went downstairs, and when I hoped for her to start yelling at him or even better, maybe hit him, all I heard instead was the normal silence of him turning on the television. What did I expect? There was never anyone that stood up for me or questioned me or helped me. Why would that ever change? The setup of the upstairs bedrooms were weird, a bit different than most other houses I had seen. I had a door from the main hallway, and the interior wall had an open doorway from Mom's room into mine. Mom slept on the right side of the bed, which put her on the same side as the open doorway. Walter would sometimes enter my room at night using that doorway, which meant he had to sneak out of bed and then walk past Mom to get into my room. Since my sister Rachel and I now shared a bed, not just a room, he had to even be more careful about his nighttime visits. His hand that covered my mouth grew a tighter grip around my jaw, so that I could feel his forced secrecy of the torture. He He was growing more violent with me on a daily basis now. Since Mom was bartending in the evenings, it was easier for him to take my life, to make my life a living hell. I had only one nightgown, which was a very thin, pale yellow, see-through cotton gown. It had a white upper part around the chest, just above my breast, with flowers of purple embroidered on it. It was a pretty gown, but I was too ashamed to wear it because it was really too revealing for me. Supposedly, this was a present he had bought for me, which Mom had allowed. I had just one bra and shared underwear with my sister, even though she was still in a child size 5. Richie had it made, or at least I thought he did. He was my brother. He had a door that closed off his room on both sides, and they each had a lock on them. Mom said, "He's a boy, and boys are different from girls. He needs his privacy." I could never understand the logic behind that excuse, but there was little I could do about changing her mind. He also had thick, heavy flannel pajamas with a shirt that buttoned all the way up to the neck. I was so jealous of those pajamas. I wanted them so badly. I had snuck a pair and stashed them in my bottom drawer. Oh, I never got the opportunity to wear them. I did hang on to them and found them later when I was 17 as I was packing to leave home. While I was trying to go through my day-to-day life of being a preteen and dealing with school, my thoughts were always concentrated on hoping that my mom was going to be home when I got home at night. Going home after school was a dreaded 5-block walk with my sister, who now had started kindergarten. The short walk felt more like 5 miles, just worrying about what was ahead that evening. There was always so much for me to do when I got home from school. First, I had to cook a dinner for the 5 of us and clean up the kitchen. Then I had to do a load of laundry, help my sister with her homework, put her to bed, and if there were time and peace, I would try to do my schoolwork as well. This had become the normal routine of my daily life. I really tried to pay attention in school, but there were too many worries at home. My favorite subjects were math and English, but I never had the guts to raise my hand or even answer a question when the teacher called on me. Walter had destroyed my self-confidence and my self-esteem with this constant abuse. Truthfully, I really didn't have either of those qualities until I was about 35. When I was in school, all I noticed were the whispers and the pointing from the other kids. I walked around by myself, keeping my head lowered and my mouth shut. Shelley was my only real friend, but unfortunately we did not share many classes together. Everything that Walter had done, along with the neglect from my mother, just helped to confirm the filthy, useless girl that I felt I was inside. I didn't want to draw any type of attention towards myself. Filthy and ugly is the way I tried and learned to be. After all, I had to live this life every day. Survival meant that I had to become that person. I had to grow and adapt to my environmental surroundings. Distracting his attention away from me was my hardest chore. I kept hoping that maybe I could turn him off. Or better, maybe I could disgust him the way that I disgusted myself, and then perhaps he would stay away. Mom was never good at encouraging proper hygiene, nor did she care about teaching proper etiquette. She didn't give the guidance that a struggling, drowning, young, preteen girl needed. There was no discussion of boys, and really no discussion of how my daily life was going at all. I was just there to help clean, cook, take care of the family when she couldn't be around. But I didn't know that was supposed to include her husband. I felt as dirty and tangled inside as my hair and body were on the outside. I was ashamed of my life and the hell that I lived in. Despite my attempts to make myself as ugly as possible, nothing deterred Walter from the sadistic passion he held for me, though. The word passion was used by multiple therapists who often told me that his involvement with me and my life had developed from a type of sick passion and jealousy. He sought me out no matter how hard I tried to avoid him. I think back as I write this and wonder if the more I tried to push him away, maybe the more that action turned him on, which increased his need to terrorize me. Every day I struggled to complete my daily chores, but while I was cooking, he would come by and rub my ass, whispering in my ear how much he loved it. He would come up behind me while I was doing dishes and grab my breast, pinching the nipple so hard it made me pull away in pain. As I sat at the table doing my homework, he would sneak up and grab at me, running his hand across my chest. He always looked at me with the eyes just glowing and a wicked smile of evil on his face. It was a battle to try and let the outside world only see the makeup of our family. No one could ever know about the impossibility of trying to be a normal child while living in a torture chamber at home. I never wanted anyone to know the true hell that existed in our house. The nights when Mom worked were always the worst. It always guaranteed that my night would be the most difficult. I could barely put dinner on the table or take care of my sister while trying to dodge his every move. Richie and Rachel were always safe if he was busy tormenting me. If I maneuvered the night well, I could at least get Rachel to bed without battling him for peace. When she got to bed, I would run in the bathroom and wash off with the soapy washcloth. It would have been impossible to attempt a bath. My night started when the yell would come from downstairs. Richie, get your ass up to bed and tell your sister to get down here, I heard him say. My brother would walk up the stairs looking at me with anger because I was allowed to stay up longer than he was. I wanted to climb in a closet and hide or maybe find some hole to escape. The voice came up again. Teresa Ann, get your ass down here right now. You better be ready for bed, too. This meant that I had best be wearing my little pale yellow nightgown, which was completely see-through. I would try to be brazen at times and leave my bra on to cover my breasts and some underwear for my bottom. Climbing those stairs down to hell was as long as that dreadful walk home from school. I wanted to turn and run out the door, run anywhere. On one particular night, I was so terrified that I went into Richie's room and locked the door behind me. Walter was really getting pissed at me and started yelling with a deep growl in his voice. He was so furious that I hadn't come back downstairs right away. How dare I go against him, he yelled. Made him angry, but no one else would do anything to help me, so I had to try and protect myself. Walter's voice only raged out towards me. He never yelled for my sister or my brother, only me. He had his own private play doll. That was it. Just a life-size doll he had the freedom to play with whenever he wanted. I wanted to be a plastic doll, like the ones I had when I was a little girl. There would be no feelings or thoughts to race through my head, no terror to make me shake in the middle of the night, no feelings of any kind. His voice kept getting louder, and I could tell how angry he was getting. Crawling into bed with Richie, I curled up next to him and wrapped my arms around him and begged him to help me. Please, Bubby. Please help me. Deep inside, I just wanted to disappear, but I knew I could never get away from him. Every night I would beg, please, God, please just make me a boy. Richie finally pushed me out of his bed when Walter started threatening to come upstairs and get me. And he started to cry a little as he told me he was sorry that he couldn't help me. "Sissy, I can't help you. You have to go down," he said. I stood there next to his bed, my small body just begging for someone to reach out for me to protect me. I stood there with my arms locked around my body, squeezing and holding myself as I cried and pleaded for his help. He was just a boy, though. What could he have done to protect me? Before I left Richie's room, I pulled out his dresser drawer and found a pair of those wonderful pajamas. Then I snuck into the bathroom and bolted both of the doors. I could still hear Walter's voice yelling for me. The little girl who stood in front of the mirror looking at herself was wondering, "What is it about me? What is it that makes him come after me?" My body was physically shaking from head to toe while I struggled to put on those flannel pajamas. Those pajamas that would cover me completely and protect me, as if they had some type of magical power that could take me out of there. I felt a little safer at first when I started down the stairs that night, but he was waiting at the bottom landing, and I could see how furious he was. He stood there like a huge barrel blocking my way. He grabbed my hair as he pushed me into the living room, and I fell to the floor. He yanked me back up by my arm, and he used his other hand to undo his belt while he dragged me to the back of the house. It was that same hateful leather belt he had drawn blood with so many times before. He threw me into the back laundry area of the house. Maybe I should have made a run for the back door. I remember looking at it. But I knew I wouldn't make it. Besides, I was just a child, a little girl getting beaten because she put on a pair of pajamas that she hoped might help to protect her. He slammed me into the corner that I couldn't get out of as he swung the belt the first time. Then he grabbed me, pushed me up against the washer, forcing his body on me so hard that it felt as if I would break in half from the pressure. He was pushing me back with all of his weight, crushing me. It felt difficult to breathe as he tried bending me backwards against the washer. He kept swinging the belt. He landed a lash around my thigh, and the leather grabbed against my skin. There was a small bathroom attached to the laundry area of our house, and he dragged me into the little room, telling me, "Get your hands over here and pull down your pants." He just kept yelling and swinging the belt. "You lean up against that sink there. Do as I said. Get those pants down now. Don't you move, little girl, or I'll rip the shit out of you." I remember his instructions for my beating so very well. Sometimes when I'm in the bathroom, I will look at the vanity and remember that girl who was so frightened that night, the girl who could not get away from him, the girl getting beaten because of the flannel pajamas. The horror I felt as he beat me was nothing new. His violence was constant, the constant reminder that he was in control. There was no escape for me. I had to adjust and allow his torture. There could be no signals to the outside world that this was happening. No one could ever know the truth that was my life. I remember so vividly the emotions of terror and humiliation that shot through me. The days of walking through the school with my head down, ashamed of myself for allowing him to play his dreadful game of torture with me. It is all too often that the abused child swallows their emotions in order to ease the pain of survival and bury the shame of their life. His words that night came out in a voice whispering rage. I thought the devil himself was speaking to me. "How dare you," he said. "You think I called you down here to see you in those ugly fucking things? You just keep trying me every chance you get, don't you? You think that can stop me?" He stepped back and grabbed the collar of the shirt, then swung his belt and it wrapped around my thigh again. It stung and I felt as though it were cutting right through my skin. I don't know how long he had me there. He was enjoying the punishment that he was dishing out. "You filthy, ugly little whore. You think you can get away from me? You will never be able to get away, he was yelling. Just do as you are fucking told and shut up. When he was finally finished, he pushed me down on a pile of dirty laundry. I felt like I was a piece of garbage lying there. Please just let me disappear, I begged. Let me crawl into the filthy pile of laundry that I felt like I was. His final statement as he walked away was, get your ugly ass up to bed. You keep trying to push me and I will get you. When you least expect it, I will be there. He walked into the living room huffing from being out of breath and sat down in his recliner. Get upstairs, you little bitch. You better make sure everyone shuts their fucking mouth. Your mother better not find out about this. Slowly, I pulled myself up. My body was stinging from the belt. Then, half stumbling, I made my way upstairs. Quietly, I eased into bed, my heart still pounding in terror and the welt still growing on my backside. Rachel was still asleep. At least her eyes were closed when I looked over at her. If she heard him beating me downstairs, she was too scared to say anything about it. My hands pulled the covers in tightly around my body, hoping that they would protect me from him. I was terrified that he wasn't finished. Sometimes after beating me, he still needed more. He would torture, send me away, and then call me back for more. Now my legs, butt, and back were stinging from the belt. The dread of what might be next took over my thoughts as I quietly cried myself to sleep. Luigi was in his room, probably still in the same huddled-up position that I had left him in, but he didn't say a word, didn't come in to check on me. My body was exhausted from the beating and the stress of it all, so I didn't hear or feel anyone around me that night. He must have felt satisfied by his imposed torture and chose not to visit me. Trembling now as the feeling of terror comes rushing back, much the same as I trembled then. It really didn't matter if he killed me, because I already felt so completely dead on the inside and so isolated from everyone on the outside. The next morning, Mom was yelling for me to get Rachel ready and come down for school. As I opened my eyes, I reached down to rub a spot on my thigh where the belt had landed. I had hoped it was all a dream, but the welts were there to prove me wrong. They swelled up more through the night, and my entire thigh was now burning with pain. My legs and every other part of me were still very sore, and when I inspected them, I could see the purple mounds of blood lying just under the flesh, perfectly in line with where the belt had landed. There were marks on my back, on my buttocks, and both thighs, and a few marks that wrapped around my calves. My body was in so much pain from the beating and slamming around the night before, and it hurt to move at all. My head was sore from where he held onto my hair, which it seemed he always did. I tried splashing cold water on my eyes to help with the swelling, but it just made them sting. The bags around them were so horribly swollen from crying. As I finished getting ready and started down the stairs, my mind was praying that Walter had already left for work so I wouldn't have to see his stare. Mom, as always, said absolutely nothing when she saw me. She didn't show any signs that she even noticed me. The normal night of my terror and torture had become the routine, and it meant nothing to anyone. It was as if I didn't even exist. Mom didn't care what happened to me. She didn't care what made me look like this or walk the way that I did. She was so absolutely blind to the pain and hurt that I had been in for the past 7 years. Her only concern that morning was for me to get my sister to school. You girls better hurry up or your sister is going to be late. So without saying a word, Rachel and I grabbed our books for school, and my dreadful day started. We got to school, and I dropped Rachel off at her classroom. Slowly, I made my way to the upper end of the building where the middle school classes were held. The kids looked at me so pathetically. My mother's lack of attention and Walter's severe cruelty made me so ashamed of who I was. My teeth were growing thick with yellow plaque, and cavities were forming along my gum line. The black holes were starting to grow. Mom still hadn't taken me to see a doctor about the rash on my arms and legs. It was spreading and getting even more infected. The sores and blisters were festering in the filth left on my body from not bathing. Walter's attacks made it impossible for me to bathe, and it would be 3 years before I could have that safety again. The teachers and kids who saw me every day all gave their haunting looks, but no one ever asked any questions, not even today with my body beaten and bruised. When I arrived at my homeroom class, the whispers started as I walked in, with my head hanging down as always. And I took my seat carefully on the hard plastic chair. It would be hell to sit in these chairs from classroom to classroom all day. But I had been taught well to ignore my pain and not say a word to anyone. During each class, I would have to explain my neglect for not having my homework done. I would love to tell each one, "Sorry I didn't get my homework done last night because my stepfather was beating the shit out of me. He beat me for 2 hours because I didn't put on my little see-through cotton gown." This is what I wanted to scream out to everyone. This is how I felt inside, but I had to maintain on the outside. Of course, as I explained my neglect of the homework, there would always be the ridicule from the teacher telling me how lazy I was. And they would ask, "Why didn't you get your homework done, Teresa?" The teachers would mock, "You must be either lazy or slow. Is that what you are?" If this continued, they would have to speak with my parents about it and have a meeting with the principal. Now I felt like shit at home and in school. Why did I have to let those people see me each day? I was trying my hardest to stay out of the way. Why couldn't he just die? He could get smashed or trapped down in the coal mine. Why couldn't God help me? These are the questions I ask each day as I try to make sense of my life. I had always believed in God and still do. But at that time, Walter had told me, God only forgives children. Until you are 12 years old, God will forgive everything you do. But after that, he won't. You are on your own. Well, I was 12 now and had to do so many awful things. It made a young girl start to wonder, did the things I had to do offend God so much that he forgot about me? Would he ever forgive me for the horrible things that I was forced to do? The next 30-some years would be spent praying and asking for the forgiveness that I felt I deserved. It took a long time to decide that I wasn't to blame for what had happened. Mom didn't help me much, so I had no choice but to protect my life in whatever manner was necessary. Walter told the story many times about how he was studying to be a minister with the Baptist Church just before he met my mom. When he talked about God, it had a profound control over me. As a kid, I felt he knew what he was talking about when it came to forgiveness. So not only did I live in constant fear of him, but also of God, constantly wondering if I would ever receive forgiveness. I went through my day worrying about the other kids or what they were whispering, wondering if my teachers were going to notice the swelling in my face or the bruise on my wrist where it grabbed me and dragged me through the house. Finally, the worst class of all, gym. Please, no. How can I get out of this? I could never go to the school nurse because it made Mom furious when she called her. So I had to go into the locker room once again and undress in front of the other girls. The marks from my beating told the story to everyone who saw them. The bruises and welts were so visible on every part of my body. My gym teacher, Mr. Gibbons, didn't say a word, but he always paid more attention to the pretty girls in class. You know, you need to lose a few pounds there, Teresa Ann, he'd say. You should be trying a little harder to get those sit-ups done right. He noticed that I was a bit out of shape, but didn't notice the rash or the bruises. Everyone saw the marks Walter had left from his anger at the wrong pajamas, but not an adult or a child was willing or wanting to ask me what happened. He had his control, and I didn't know when it would end. Would he kill me? Would I be taken away and locked in a jail for what happened between us? Many questions go through a young child's mind when someone has complete control over them through violence and torture. You can destroy a child with a single action. But if you make it their everyday life, you take away whom that person is inside and also who that person should grow to be. The school day is done now. The bell is rung and my heart starts pounding. Time for me to collect Rachel and again make that dreaded walk home to hell. We arrive at home to find Mom at work. So my routine of dinner, dishes, Rachel, and homework was supposed to be what I could concentrate on doing. The teachers had given me extra assignments to get done as my punishment for not completing the first. I knew Walter would still be upset with me about the pajamas, so I had it in my mind to stay away from him. But how do you stay away from the man you have to call Dad? The first hour or so went along pretty good since he hadn't gotten home from work right away. Rachel got started with her homework while I cooked dinner. Richie was lying on the floor watching television. Then we heard the car, the door being slammed shut. Next, I heard him on the front porch and then coming through the door. I could tell by the time he arrived and the way he looked that he had stopped at the bar after work. He had thrown back as many beers as Mom would give him before sending him home to us kids. He walked through the entry hallway, coming towards the kitchen, carrying that round aluminum three-piece lunch pail, which was the trademark of being a coal miner. The coal dust would scratch into the aluminum when I washed it, and it made my spine cringe like fingernails on a chalkboard. The gritty sound would slice through my body, down my spine, and splash into my guts. Walter took his spot at the dinner table after setting his bucket on the kitchen counter. I took the pork chops out of the skillet, placing them on a serving dish. Everything was now on the table. Nothing was late. I was starting off on a good note for the evening. He glared at me while I tried to eat dinner. You could see the anger boiling inside him. It was as if he were trying hard not to kill me. The only conversations ever held at our dinner table were instructions on how the evening would go. I was to clean up the dishes and get Rachel ready for bed. Everyone else was to lie on the floor and watch television or go up to their room. Whatever you did, you had to be quiet. Everything was done according to instruction that night. We ate at 5 o'clock in the evening, so by the time I got the kitchen all cleaned up, it was time to get Rachel ready for bed. Finally, she had gotten to bed promptly at 7 o'clock. Then I went back downstairs to watch television for an hour before doing my homework, hoping that all was going to be quiet that evening. Walter napped in his recliner after dinner. So with food and sleep, he had sobered up. I took my usual spot on the couch, cuddled in the corner at the end. Because I was still recovering from the beating the night before, I huddled deeper in the couch, hoping to disappear and not get hurt again. Slowly, our evening of trying to relax started to change. Walter got up out of the recliner and came over to the couch, sitting down next to me. I couldn't stand him around me. I hated to even look at him. Wondering to myself, what is he going to do now? Please don't let him touch me in front of my brother. The big, thick, cold dust, black hand reached over and touched my thigh. I scooted closer into the corner of the couch, trying desperately to climb inside of it. He scooted closer to me, not saying a word, or even looking to see if Richie was watching. His big arm went up and around over my left shoulder, and reaching his large hand over, started rubbing my breast. He found the nipple, started twisting it. I looked over at Richie, and he was just lying there on his side, glued to the television, as if to ignore us both. Looking back at Walter, I saw his eyes. Those eyes that glared at me all the time, like he was trying to burn me, trying to find his dirty little girl. One hand busy with my breast, as the other kept rubbing higher on my thigh. My body was clenching up so tightly, I thought it would take a crowbar to pry me open. His hand was on my thigh, getting closer to my vagina, thinking to myself, it couldn't be possible for him to sit here and force this with my brother sitting in the same room. I wanted to call out to Richie for help. Please help. Please do not let him do this to me. Walter found his way to my vagina, prying my legs apart with his hand just enough to be able to rub against it. He was really doing this. He was actually sitting here on the couch, pushing himself up against me while he played with my boobs and my vagina in front of my brother. I wanted to get up and run and keep running, but I knew he would chase me down, and I knew it would only be worse. So I sat there, screaming for help on the inside, but all I could do is just say, stay quiet on the outside. I didn't know what would happen if I yelled out for help, and I was too scared to challenge him. He would probably hurt me, and maybe even hurt Richie, if I tried to stop him. Walter started using his same old excuse. Come here. Love me like a daughter is supposed to love her dad. That got Richie's attention, and he rolled over, looking up to see what was going on. He said something to Walter, but I really don't remember what it was. I know it made him angry. Next thing I knew, my brother was sitting on the other side of him. Richie was scared of him as I was, but I could tell that he wanted to be a brave boy and stand up to him. He was only 14. I, almost 13. Both of us knew the evil we lived in, but there was nothing we could do about it. Richie did have it a lot easier than I, because Walter never really talked to him at all, except his forceful fatherly direction. He spoke of horrible things when he looked at Richie, and he started asking him a bunch of questions. Pardon me. Don't you like your sister, he said. And he continued. Isn't she pretty? What do you think? Come on, son. Isn't she pretty? Why don't you give your sister a big-ass kiss? Tell her you love her. Come on, do it. Richie and I both looked at each other. Neither of us knew what to do, but we knew better than to make him angry. Richie had seen and heard my beatings, and I knew that it scared him. Walter pushed our heads together, and we lightly touched lips, and both of us jerked back quickly in disgust. Walter didn't think we kissed each other the right way, so he made us do it till we got it right. Finally, Richie stood up and said he wasn't going to do this anymore and ran upstairs, leaving me to fend for myself. I wanted to run upstairs with Richie and lock us in his room. I wasn't allowed, though, as Walter reached over and held me still on the couch, pressing his hand down on my thigh to keep me there. He wasn't done playing with me yet. He turned to me, very angry, reaching his hands out and grabbing at my breast. It was as if he were fascinated with them, always grabbing and pulling at them. He pushed his hand up against my chest, saying to me, go upstairs and put on your gown. And get back down here. You better not try to come down in those pajamas again either. Remember what happened last night. got up, and as I walked up the stairs, my head down, whining, crying a little to myself, I thought about how bad it was going to get that night. I can't take another beating, I thought. Slowly, I began changing clothes as he was downstairs yelling for me to hurry up. Better not make him wait too long. It only makes it worse. This was one of the many thoughts that were racing around in my head. Again, I had to remember that I had to live here, and no one was going to protect me. Trees, Ann, you better get your ass back down here. You better be fucking quick about it. Again, I went into Richie's room and stood there in my gown crying, begging for him to do something. But he had already been embarrassed enough. Can't help you, sissy, he said. Please, Bubby, I begged him. He's going to hurt me. He rolled over to face the wall and whispered, sorry, Teresa. He's yelling up for you, so you better get downstairs. I walked out of Richie's room, trying hard to stop crying. I didn't want Walter to see me upset because that seemed to just entice his reaction. He enjoyed things most when he knew I was hurt. My body felt like it was turning solid as I walked back down the stairs, trying as hard as I could to turn to stone so I didn't have to feel what he was going to do. That is how I learned to adapt to his demands. I couldn't let what he was doing show on the outside, so I learned to die a little on the inside. And now as I walked down the stairs toward the voice that was growling my name, it was like walking to my death. You don't want to go to him, but you know that you have to, so you block off all feeling about it. You disappear deep inside. At times, I could even make myself forget about how it felt when he touched me, or covered my mouth, or pushed my legs open. I lived with forgetting the past horrible actions for most of my life. When I walked into the living room, I saw him laying there on the couch. I didn't want to go near him. And he reached out to grab me by my wrist, the same one that was still bruised from last night. As I started to sit next to him, the phone began to ring. Thank God, I thought. Someone is going to save me. Shelley was on the phone. She was worried about how bad I was today at school. And she was checking in on me to see if she could help. As the conversation started, Walter looked at me with a very disapproving look. I was ready to hang up and make the call short when he stopped me by holding up a finger and motioning for me to come and sit next to him on the couch. He was laying down and wanted me to sit on the edge next to him while I continued talking to her. I really didn't know what to think at the time, but it terrified me. Too many things were rushing through my head. I was standing in my little cotton gown. My only friend was on the phone checking on me, and he wanted to play his games as I talked to her. This can't be happening, I thought. How can I do this and not let her know what's going on? He'll kill me. If I let her know, he'll kill me. I did as he said and sat down, and his hand reached up to pinch my nipple. The little nightgown was the only thing I had on, just as he had instructed. It was so embarrassing to sit there with his hands all over me and his eyes glaring at me, but I had to do it. Shelley and I were talking and trying to hold a general conversation, but I couldn't relax because his hands were traveling all over my body, caressing my legs, my arms, and his hands went around my neck, squeezed my throat before they traveled back down to pinch and twist my nipples again, as if he were trying to make me wince or make some other noise he could punish me for when I got off the phone. He was whispering to me, shh, it's all right. You just keep talking. So I did. I sat there next to him with his hands touching and probing, pulling and pinching, trying hard not to cry. I can't let her know what he's doing, I thought. I just have to sit here, let him do whatever he desires. Hopefully he won't hurt me, at least not while I'm on the phone with her. After discussing the day at school and talking about the math homework, then dodging the questions of my physical condition that day, but trying to let her know that I was all right, finally, she was ready to get off the phone. As I stood up to walk over and hang up the phone, slapped me on the ass and motioned for me to try to continue the conversation. I was trying to hold back tears, but sniffled, which made him very upset because he was afraid she would catch on that something was wrong. She wasn't allowed to stay on the phone with me. Her mom was very strict about our contact after a while. She had begun to suspect me as being a bad influence on Shelley, so she limited our time together. When I turned around, Walter was leering at me as if I were a meal he was about to eat. And he got up off the couch as I walked past, going towards the stairs, grabbed me by my hair again, turning me and staring me right in the eye, he said, "Stop your fucking crying. I didn't do anything to hurt you. You get your ass up to bed and remember, I don't want to hear a fucking sound from anybody up there. I'll make sure you go away from here." He would always make some type of threat when he was done playing. It was his way to secure control. As I climbed in bed with my sister, I tried to curl up in the smallest ball that my body would allow. I lay on my left side looking over at her. She was all snuggled up and sleeping very peacefully, just like a child should be able to do. Not me, though. Can't remember the last time I had a peaceful night's sleep. I just lay there crying ever so quietly, inside wanting to yell as loud as I could, but as always, silently crying, terrified that those actions would not be the end, and waiting for the next move he would make. It was a fear buried deep within me. I was so terrified of him, and it wouldn't let me have any peace for many years. I didn't feel safe anywhere. I had to find a way to tell my mom how bad things were getting, and hopefully she would help this time. The beatings, the molestations, the coal stains that would forever be in my soul, these were more than this little girl could handle. Always I wondered if Mom would even care about what was happening. She had never stopped him before. She sat right on the couch while he came into the bathroom after me. It seemed as though she only got angry with me when she found us naked in her bed that day. So I didn't have much faith in her helping me. Didn't she know this wasn't right? Didn't she see how bad I was hurting? She had to know something was wrong. I no longer bathed normally. I always jumped when he came home. I tried to always stay far away from him. Didn't she see how much I hated him? My mother absolutely had to know something was wrong, but she chose not to acknowledge what was happening. She was having fun bartending at night while I had to deal with her sick, perverted husband. She didn't have time for us anymore. She couldn't be bothered. Never do I remember her participating in anything at school, nor did she even just hold conversations with us or ask us about our day. She never asked about how things were when she wasn't there. She had to see how angry Richie and I had gotten. We both had changed so very much. She had forgotten about us, though. She was trying to live a new life. Even taking us to the doctor or dentist was more of a problem than she was willing to deal with. The day finally came when I had the perfect opportunity to say something to Mom. She was home one evening and yelling about why I wasn't able to get all of my chores and homework done before going to bed. A note had arrived from the the school concerning my consistent D average that I was getting in all of my classes. If I didn't start getting homework done, they would fail me, and I would repeat the eighth grade all over again. Mom wondered what the hell I was doing that was keeping me from getting everything done. I took the chance and told her specifically about Walter coming into my room at night and rubbing himself all over me. I told her about the phone call with Shelley and how he made me sit there and talk to my best friend while he played his little hand games with me. And, of course, I told her about the beating he gave me for not putting on my nightgown and coming downstairs in Richie's pajamas instead. There were no hugs of sorrow, no kisses to make it better. There was no tenderness to say she was sorry it happened. Nothing. No emotion at all to help the little girl inside. The only emotion I saw was the anger as her little green eyes grew wide and her stern voice as she said, "Get up to your room. I'll talk to your father when he gets home." When I told Mom what was happening, it took every ounce of courage that I could muster out of my little body. I was trying to talk. As I saw the rage growing in her eyes, I stuttered and stammered, and I struggled to put actions with feelings. I carried so much hurt inside that I just needed to get it out, like I was releasing the poison that had seeped into my body. I shook as if I were a leaf hanging from a bushy green tree getting blown around by a summer storm. But I felt like the only leaf on that tree. The mere thought of the things he had told me coming true, being taken away, getting put in jail, you'll never see your mom, your brother, or your sister again. All of this filled my head and raced around in there with my emotions and the acts of torment. Then it just spilled out of my mouth along with the tears that ran down my face. It took everything I had to tell her what was happening. And all she could do was send me to my room. Once again, she would ignore my cry for help. That night, I tried to stay awake until Walter got home so I could hear Mom yelling at him. I knew he would deny everything, and I also knew she would believe him. I knew he would be furious with me for saying anything, and I was terrified of what might happen. As I lay there in bed, waiting, thinking, worrying about everything, the rush of emotion exhausted me and finally sleep came. There was so much stress from carrying around the horrible guilt and shame for things that had happened over the past 8 years. Now I opened that wall of shame in hopes of stopping it from happening again. Mom worried me because she was so angry and she had deserted me so many times before. And I wasn't sure I could trust her now. This had to be my fault, I thought. I must have been bad. If she yelled at him or even threatened him, if they fought at all when he got home, it didn't wake me, and nothing changed in my life. He would come back at me, filled with the vengeance and anger, though. This would prove to be much worse than anything that had happened before. So that's two chapters that...
That was... What I was thinking about is instead of you reading the other two, I think what you read when I'm sitting there listening to it was enough to tell everybody what your book was about and to give them a sense of what you lived without you having to go deeper into... the other piece.
Thank you.
But you did a fantastic job reading it. But what I would like you to do is read the obituary piece, and then then we'd like to hear more about what's going on with your life and just talk, if that's okay with you.
Sure, absolutely. Let me get... what we talked about. I just laid down the book because I just wasn't thinking.
That's all right. Take a second. It's fine.
It's reading that, and it just brings that so much.
Oh, I know. And that's why I don't want you to have to go any deeper into it than that. And from there,
Okay. Everybody
can get the book and continue reading on
their own. Right. Okay, so my stepfather passed away just a couple of years ago. And as I let you know, as I've let many people know, my entire family has walked away from me. There is
right. Nobody
that talks with me, and that happened before I ever published the book. So when my stepfather passed away, my youngest sister, which was his daughter, called me to let me know. And when I pulled up his obituary online, I was so shocked by what was written there that in the privacy of my home, on my own computer, I created my own obituary for him, and this is what I put.
Okay.
Here lies Walter, the man who terrorized the little girl for 12 constant years of her life. He molested her, beat her, tortured her, stalked her, and raped her. He was able to have this control because of the mother who neglected to hear her daughter's cry for help. He was given the secrecy because the little girl was too terrified to speak about the fears of her night. Now, he must answer for his crimes as he is in front of the world's strongest judge. It is my belief that he will now pay his penance for which is deserved of these crimes. And that was my obituary that I printed out on my printer and posted up on my refrigerator. Kept it close to me. Read it every single day for a couple of weeks until I let it all pass through my body.
Yeah. And that is, I'm so glad you did that, because that's such a powerful way to release it. Because that is an honest obituary. That's who he was. Whatever else was
exactly written
is all an illusion.
And, the sad part is that he was a WW2 vet, and he was in the Korean War Air Force. He had spent a few years, and I think it was like 8 years or something like that. But my mother, as much as she disgusted, as much as she was disgusted with him herself, which she had told me about many times before he ever died, she's the one that called for them to come in and give him military honors with a three-gun salute at his funeral. So he got buried with full military honors and got the full respect of the public and everyone around. Me, everybody just abandoned me completely.
When you said that about your family not speaking to you now and walking away from you, I think they walked away from you the minute that Walter came in the house. That piece by piece, they never did stand by you. They left you to take all that he had to give while they were in safety.
Exactly.
So you were always standing alone.
I kept them safe.
You did.
In endured everything that he dished out, and I knew that even as a little girl, you know, I knew that if he was coming at me, that he wasn't bothering them, and Mom made it so perfectly clear that it was my job, my responsibility to take care of everybody and keep everybody safe and do for everyone. So that was what I did, including the worst parts of it. You know?
And I remember hearing all through the book where you were worried about them all the time, even no matter how brutal what you were living was. You always were concerned about everybody else.
Yes, I was.
Trisha, I have a question for you. When you talked about, you know, how you coped by not acting out, not defying him, so that the treatment would not become more severe, what did you think in your mind as a child? What did you think was going through your mother's head? Did you think that she was just completely in denial and ignoring what was happening, didn't want to deal with it? Or do you think there was a piece of her who understood that abuse and didn't want to face it, or that even perhaps there was some jealousy that he was so, attached and obsessed with you?
When I was small, I always felt that it was more that my mom didn't love me.
Mm-hmm.
Why did she let him do these things to me? Why didn't she pay attention whenever I talked to her?
Mm-hmm.
As I got older, and different things started getting worse with him, it was a lot on her part that I picked up as jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
I say that specifically because there was a point that he was insisting, I was in between 13, 14, and he was insistent that I go along on their dates, and he would take us out to nice dinners, this is me, my mom, and him, and we would go to nice dinners, and then we would go to the bar, and where they always had music, country music, live band playing on the weekends, and their regular hangout, so, you know, the other coal miners were there, and the people from our town and the other town were there, and, you know, they pretty much got acquainted with my face almost every weekend being there. Just this kid amongst all of these adults, and, you know, my stepfather would go up, and he would get drinks for everybody, and I was drinking 7-7s because that's what my mom drank. So if anybody came to the table, I had to push the drink over in front of my mom so that way he wouldn't get busted, or the bar wouldn't get busted, or whatever. You know, I mean, I was just a kid. And then I guess it took about maybe 2 months of going out on these dates with them. And Mom just, one night he was, you know, asked us out, you know, it's Friday night, girls, let's, you know, Teresa Ann, get upstairs, get ready so we can go out, you know, put on something nice. He'd always tell me put on something sexy so the guys will pay attention, because he always tried to hook me up with these guys and teach me how to slow dance. And it was just horrible. And my mom was just right there. And, you know, this at this one point, she finally decided, you know, you are absolutely not going. You just in your room, you stay here, you take care of your sister, you get these things done, and you get those dishes done, and we'll be back later. And, you know, so at that point, I started picking up on the jealousy.
Yeah, I was, you know? I mean, I was definitely thinking that as you were speaking, that it was not just a matter of her turning a blind eye or brushing it under the rug or, you know, trying to escape it, but it was also her own insecurity, and then that turned into her own participation in your punishment.
Right. It you know, it was my fault. When I was nine, it was the, you know, I mean, other than her sitting in the living room while he came into the bathroom and her being in her bedroom while he, quote unquote, came in to tell me good night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at nine, she was waitressing and he made sure that I took care of all of my responsibilities while she was at work. And if it was the summertime, she would sometimes work days, and he would be at the house with us. And I remember one day specifically, I was outside being nine. I'm playing in the yard. I've got my brother and my sister and our neighbors, and we're chasing little frogs around in the little ditch next to the house. You know, we're being kids, little kids. And all of a sudden I hear his voice just screaming for me, and I go running up to the house thinking that there was something that I had forgotten to do, or maybe I left a dirty dish, or, you know, maybe there was something he needed or whatever. And, you know, he called me into the house, and then he took me back into their bedroom and, you know, stripped down naked and got in bed with me, and I could feel his erection and, you know, everything that he was doing. And before he could actually make penetration, my mother surprised us both and came home early from work and walked into the bedroom and caught us laying in bed, naked. You know, just him doing his thing and me not knowing what in the world to do because I was nine. And she yelled at me. And, you know, it was Teresa Ann, get your ass up out of my bed. You know, and then it was, you know, you get your ass to your room. And I didn't hear any arguing. I didn't hear any fighting. I wasn't allowed to come out of my room for the rest of the night. I had to go without dinner, but I was made to come in to clean up the kitchen. And then I was sent back to my room. And, you know, even at that point, you know, I mean, a mom walking in and seeing her little girl in that position would have freaked. And immediately gotten that child out of there, called the cops, did whatever, got the man out of the house, whatever, you know. But you would have done something because you're seeing it with your own two eyes. And no, not my mother.
Yeah. So she obviously had her own set of mental issues there.
Yeah.
So how long has it been since you've had any contact with your brother and sister?
With my brother, it's been about, oh my goodness, it's probably been 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
With my sister, it's only been about 3 years. With my mother, it's been 4 years.
How long has the book been out?
The book's been out, it'll be a year next month.
Now, I personally believe that your mom and him had more of an active conversation about what he could and couldn't do with the children, because he didn't touch the other ones. Although he would beat your brother from time to time, he never sexually touched the other ones.
No,
and his own
no.
daughter, he never touched at all. And that's
yeah,
the thing
with
these predators
yeah.
is they don't mind, like, people think, well, why would he have you drinking with them and everything? But you really are their sex toy. So as long as what you're doing brings them pleasure, like him bringing people over to the house to try to sleep with you or all those
right.
different things, he enjoyed all that. But if
right.
you personally had a crush on someone or fell in love with someone, he would lose his mind because
oh, God,
you're a
yes.
possession.
Yeah, yeah. When I got my first boyfriend and he just happened to come to the house one evening and he was sitting on the floor in the kitchen talking to me while I was doing dinner dishes, and, you know, my stepfather walked in and literally started kicking him. You know,
oh, yeah.
made him get up and leave. You know, that was my first boyfriend, and I was, you know, of course, so embarrassed, and we lived in a small town, so everybody knew about it, you know,
right.
but, you know, because kids talk, that, you know, even, I think that was the hardest part for me, was the complete acceptance by the people in our town as to what they saw as I literally rotted away. Now you've seen the YouTube video that I put out.
Yes.
And matter of fact, I whenever I clicked the link for the show, you actually had some flashes pop up showing my legs and my teeth. My arms looked the same way.
Yeah. Can you tell people how to find that video? It's a cycle of abuse.
Sure.
Stop whispering on YouTube.
Right. Right. It's go to YouTube and type in search cycles of abuse. Stop whispering. -stop whispering. Because I've started a cause on, you know, Facebook causes. For Stop Whispering is the name of the cause, and that's what I did the YouTube video for, was to draw everybody's attention to this is how bad it gets when nobody does anything to help a child.
Right.
That
was
so
brave of you to do that video. Because everything that you pointed out was everything you were so sensitive about and had hated all your life. And you had the courage to sit in front of a camera. Yes, and sit in front of a camera and do that is the ultimate in a survivor regaining their voice.
Yes.
And to sit there in short sleeves, I mean, no sleeves and shorts.
Right,
and,
yeah, I was in tank top and shorts. It was summertime. Yeah, I made that this past summer. I think it was July I posted it up, and, you know, I'll share it on my page every once in a while. I don't like to share it a lot. I guess I kind of, you know, I'm proud of it that it's out there, but I'm also horribly embarrassed.
You were brave in the moment, and now it's harder to...
You know, when I look at it now, I'm like, oh, my God, Trish, I can't believe you did that. You know?
No, I think it's fantastic because people need to see exactly what happens. And you are a beautiful lady. Everything he ever said about you was complete crap because you are absolutely a beautiful lady. And I see that picture of you as a child, and there was nothing wrong with that child whatsoever. Except that they were in the hands of a sociopath. But there was nothing wrong with you as a child, and you were a beautiful child, and you're a beautiful woman. And you were just in the hands of a sociopath. And I don't know if your mom was narcissistic or a sociopath or just...
A combination of both.
Maybe so. but
just plain evil.
She just sold you out so that she could have the comfort of her life without all the burden. She fulfilled the societal checkbox, I'm a mother and I have children. And then she checked out of the rest of it and let you as a child run a household and do everything else that's required as a wife. So, and that's, you became a non-human to her. And that's why she never engaged and asked you what's going on with you or even cared, because she already knew.
Right, yeah. She knew what the horror her children were having to deal with, because she would feed him the alcohol before he ever came home to us.
Right.
And you know, she knew exactly what would happen because it happened every time he drank.
And when she came, I mean, when you came downstairs that after he beat you so bad, and for her to be so indifferent to it tells you everything you need to know.
Oh, yeah.
Because it had to be just so unbelievably obvious, and a normal mom would be like, what the hell happened to you?
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's not what I would consider a mom at all.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't have any parents. You were the parent, actually, and the most sane person in the whole house.
Well, thank you for that. I'm not so sure I agree with the sanity part.
Well, you're the only one that had any structure to that house and was taking care of everybody and meals and everything else. You were the only parent in the house. To any
it was just so programmed into me.
Right.
And I actually, you know, when my children grew up and left the nest, I went through such, oh, my God, I went through such hell just trying to figure out what I was going to do with myself, because there was nobody around for me to have to take care of anymore.
I know. And when a caregiver all of a sudden is in silence, it really will self-destruct them sometimes, because they've never focused on themselves.
Right. And I had so much that I had buried and I had carried with me that, you know, I mean, I was 37 before I ever really started going into therapy. You know, already had gone through, you know, getting away from my stepfather and then 20 years of battery and emotional and financial abuse from my husband and boyfriends, and you know, the pattern that I was in, it was victim to victim, and then you know, offender after offender after offender.
Yeah, you picked those horrible, horrible people that just did. I mean, it was one abuser after the other that was just. I mean,
it just kind of came to me, you know. It's funny because, I mean, it's not funny. It's not funny, haha. But it's a bit difficult to explain. But all I can do is explain it the way that it was explained to me, and that is that somebody that is in such a pattern of trained behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Will give off signs of being that person, because it is their nature from the very first contact with anyone or the very first date that somebody takes you out on. They can tell right there and then how much they're going to be able to get away with. And I was that perfect person for anyone that was an alcoholic, a wife beater, a controller, a narcissist, a sociopath. I was that perfect person that showed them everything, never spoke out of turn, never disagreed with anything that they, you know, wanted, or always took care of everything. So I was that perfect person to be put into that control path, and it took a long time for me to get away from that and realize, you know, I really didn't get away from it until I saw what it was doing to my children. That's when I got away from it.
And that's normally the deal breaker, is you can do something to the abused person all their life, but when you turn toward their children, that's when it starts clicking and making sense that that's not right.
You know, right, you know, and it wasn't that they ever physically harmed my children, but, you know, the things they would say about my children, the way that they would address my children or even ignore my children, or all the things that I knew what my kids were thinking at the time that particular instance happened, because I remembered being that kid.
Or even seeing your mom beat.
Absolutely.
Like, I've seen my mom knocked to the ground, and I've seen her self-worth taken and just ripped to shreds, and that leaves a scar in itself.
Yeah, it does. And my daughters have, you know, problems with developing healthy relationships.
Yep, it's very hard.
And, you know, that's because of what they saw, you know, and who their mother was. The situations that brought my decisions into play rolled forward and made that impact on them, because, you know, that's the way that cycle works. You know, I'm trained, I make these decisions, I make these choices. Now this starts over again, and now my children are seeing it, and they're having to be a part of that. And that's whenever I had to call it quits. I couldn't do it anymore. That was my stronghold for getting out, getting away. Unfortunately, I didn't get away before he hurt me permanently. I've got the spinal cord trauma and the three different cysts in my spinal canal. A lot of vertebral damage to my spine, and the PTSD is totally out of whack, and the fibromyalgia from the nerve sensors being all twisted and everything. So, it's been a difficult life, and unfortunately, for me, at the in 07, I actually had to give up working because I couldn't shake the migraines. I couldn't function. My back started in severe pain, my hands burning, my arms burning, and went to the doctor, and it took about a year for them to figure out what was going on. But they finally did the right test, and they figured out what it was, and, you know, and now it's a matter of, you know, I had to go on disability, both for mental, emotional reasons for me not being able to function under that high stress level job anymore.
Right.
Because professionally, I had always done very well. Once I had gone back to school and I had gotten my GED and then on to business school and graduated valedictorian with three children to take care of.
Wow.
Awesome. I did great on that end of it, and I was so extremely proud of myself for that valedictorian. It was like, other than being a mom, it was like the only big thing that I had ever achieved. But thankfully, I had done that, because when I decided to leave my second husband and end the abusive type of relationship, it actually took about 6 months for me to get on my feet, maybe about a year, rather, for me to get on my feet. But with the education, I was led into a good position with a good company, had the job security, had half decent pay coming in, and I was able to purchase a small house for me and the kids. And,
right.
you know, we had our own little safe house then, and no evil was allowed to cross the threshold. That was our safe place. And, and you know, that was our house, and that's what
right.
I told them, that, you know, this is our house, and, you know, nobody evil and nobody mean is going to come in here and cause problems in our house. This is ours,
yeah.
and we're not doing
that's
that
great.
Game anymore. So, you know, it led to a good, yeah.
I applaud you, Teresanne, for several things. You mentioned the video. I did watch the YouTube video, and I applaud you for standing up and showing your beautiful body and the scars, that it will be a constant reminder of how you overcame this situation. And I'm sure you still struggle with it on very many levels, but the fact that you had the courage to finally say enough is enough, and you know, whatever that trigger was, you're watching your children, you know, become potentially victims of the same thing. I think it takes tremendous courage to step out of a mindset that you have had with you your entire life of how to survive, and that you were complicit with those other men, you know, as you were an adult, but you were not complicit because you wanted to be. It was because it was the only way you knew how to be.
Right.
And I think it's just wonderful that you have finally broken that mold and that you're doing these other things now, and hopefully you're finding some healing and some feeling of security in what you're doing now.
Oh, thank you, Mary. Yes, I am. I feel so much more at peace. Speaking out and being able to reach out to others and help them. I've started a private women's support group online attached to my Facebook page. So women who are victims and struggling, we can guide you to the right places to use the right tools to get out safely. Stalking victims, cyberbullying victims. We've got references that will guide you through protecting yourself and getting out safely. With, you know, publishing the book, that gave the voice to that person that I had buried inside for so long. That little girl, that Teresanne, was my family name. My father had actually named me when I was born as Patricia Ann, but my brother couldn't say the name Patricia, so my given nickname became Teresa Ann. And, you know, even in school, that's, you know, they would have my legal name written, you know, but I would always write my name as Teresa Ann. And my fourth grade teacher actually connected with me, and she says, I can still remember you arguing with me that this was your name and this was how you spelled it, because she said it was such an odd way of spelling Teresa that she remembered going through that with me. So, you know, it was just, you know, it was a name that I was proud of because my real father had given it to me. And I chose to use that name for the book because in my house, when anyone was talking to me or about me, that was the name that they used.
Right.
So it was only a, you know, and that's the other part of me that I felt, you know, Trish was the other person. She was the adult, the person that had ended up getting away. And whenever I left home, Teresanne stayed behind. And I carried forward with just Trish. account. So.
Well, what would you say to that little girl now, looking back after writing the book and everything you know now? What would you say to her?
I would tell her that I am so sorry that she had to go through that, that she had to feel those feelings, and she had to turn herself to stone, and that nobody paid attention. I would just hold her and let her cry.
Yep.
And tell her how sorry. And I've held myself, and I've cried, and I've comforted myself a lot these past 5 years. I've had that time with, you know, facing the survivor part of me, with being in a finally, you know, finding the love of my life, a man who truly respects me and loves me and treats me kind and gentle and supports me and protects me, and all levels of love that you would think or imagine that love should be. You know, I finally found it. I've been with him so tremendously happy for the past 7 years. You know, my kids are grown and gone, so since I've had to give up work, I've had a lot of time to face my past and to absorb the pain and honor the feelings that I had, because that was the most important part of it, was that I had never allowed myself to feel any part of it. So I truly had to, as I wrote the book, each incident, each day that I wrote about in my story actually recovered those feelings, those buried emotions, those buried thoughts, those everything that it just brought back everything piece by piece. Not that I didn't remember it. I did remember it happening, but I had never allowed myself to feel it writing the book and wanting to express those feelings in the book. I had to feel those feelings, and that was a big journey for me to, you know, take my journal and actually put them into a story, to put them into words that I wanted to publish, you know, put out and publish and let my children read.
Right.
To find out who their mother really is. They had always known, I guess my, oh my goodness, I guess my son was about 13 maybe, whenever I told them that bad things had happened to me by my stepfather, the man that my mother was still married to, and they knew bits and pieces, but they didn't know the whole story. And I know that they carry some anger at me over the choices and decisions that I made and the way that those played out to affect their lives. So I was really hoping with the book,
what is blame?
You know, for them to be able to read it and understand who I really was and why I did what I did. You know, that I didn't intentionally do anything that, you know, to put them in harm's way.
Right. So, when you walk out of that level of abuse, it's almost impossible to have parenting skills with all that you're suffering.
Right.
Well, and it's a story that had to be told, regardless of whatever, whoever it affected. It had to be told. And, again, with the courage, I commend you for that. But I wonder, the book that you have written, do you feel like you have said what you need to say? Or is there more? Or will you write more? Or do you feel like you have closure with that piece of it, with letting it out into the open?
With this piece, and with what I'm involved with encouraging other survivors and helping them get that courage to speak up, and helping them to find their voice.
Keep building on it from there.
I really feel I'm okay. I am at a place where I've got a lot of peace in my life and a lot of joy in my life. And, you know, for the first time in my life, I can actually say that I love my life. And I mean that sincerely. You know, do I still have feelings every time I walk through my hallway and I see that picture? You know, because it's hanging in my hallway. I give her that honor that I did put that picture in my hallway. So it's there to remind me. You know, every time I think, every time I get a thought or a flashback, that picture's there. That little girl's there saying, you know what, we made it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We're here, we made it, we're doing good.
Well, before we start wrapping up, can you tell people how to get in touch with you and the radio show you're working on?
Sure, absolutely. No, thank you. You can find me, you can connect with me at facebook.com/TrishaGirl62 or Facebook and just find Patricia A. McKnight. And I've even got the nickname Trisha there, so everybody will see that. You can, if you're interested in the women's private support group, it is by placement only, because there are some questions that I like to ask ahead of time to make sure that we're keeping people out that don't need to be in. So if you're interested in the support group, then connect with me on Facebook and send me a private message, and we'll discuss it further that way, because as I said, it is by placement only.
Right.
With the Blog Talk Radio that I'm working on is Dreamcatchers for Abused Children, Blog Talk Radio. And the show is on every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And it is called Survivors Speak Out. Try to have a guest on now and then. Try to give survivors their chance to speak with us as well and share their stories. You can also email me directly at trish.mcknight@live.com. I'm also on Twitter, TrishaGirl62. So I'm out there pretty much. You can connect with me almost any place on the web. So
it sounds like you're a very busy woman.
I'm trying to keep it going out there. You know, if you don't talk about it in your own neighborhood and keep it going, you know, as David said in the beginning of the show, it's a subject that is addressed a lot, but never enough.
Exactly.
You know, the child abuse, until it stops, it'll never be enough. And that's the way I feel about it. So
thank you so much for coming on. Mary, is there anything else you wanted to say before we close?
Oh, just to thank you, Trusanne, for your valiant efforts in your survival story, and also to congratulate you and just revel in the thought of you having found this loving man now for, I think you said, 7 years, and just to hope that you embrace every second and every moment of his respect and his loyalty and his adoration of you, and embrace that now. And of course, you'll always be who you were, but you can now be who you are.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm at peace. I'm good. And Nell and I talk about it. I enjoy my life now, and I want to live my life, and I want to finally be able to reach out and do the things that make me happy, and, given that voice out there, I enjoy that, and if I can do that and make a difference at the same time, all the much better, so that's what I'm trying to do.
You are doing.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. It
now.
Was our honor. And we're going to dedicate
this. So awesome.
We're going to dedicate this last song to you. It's called "The Strong One."
Oh.
And everybody, protect the children. Look around. Be aware, because there are abused
so
children everywhere who need you.
Thank you, Nell.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Mary.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Uh-huh.